RAC's Post-Op Podcast is brought to you with the compliments of the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons and leading financial services organisation, the Bongiorno National Network, the preferred choice for medical professionals across Australia. World-leading neurosurgeon Professor Jeffrey Rosenfeld is acknowledged for his research into finding new treatments and improving outcomes for patients with traumatic brain injuries. This year, he was awarded the Companion of the Order of Australia, the highest civilian honour in the country. Professor Rosenfeld also is a long-standing fellow of the college, a senior neurosurgeon at the Alfred Hospital, a professor of surgery at Monash University, and the director of the Monash Institute of Medical Engineering. Among his many achievements, he served as a surgeon in conflict zones with the Australian Defence Force several times over his career, most recently in Iraq. It's in these combat areas he's witnessed the devastating effects bomb blasts produce. And it's the actions of first responders which can mean the difference between life and death by applying a tourniquet in those first few minutes to stem the large loss of bleeding. It's those lessons he'd like to see applied back home, like the hemorrhage control course, or HECOM, developed by the American College of Surgeons. He explains more about that shortly. But first, Professor Rosenfeld tells Chris Ashmore about his current research at Monash University into developing a bionic vision device to help people see again.
This project came about from the 2020 summit that Kevin Rudd held about a decade ago in Canberra. I wasn't there, but one of the things that Kevin Rudd, the Prime Minister at the time, wanted to do was to put some money into research to lead to a bionic vision program or device in Australia, because Australia had developed a bionic hearing device, that is the cochlear device. So it was felt that perhaps Australia should put its energy and endeavour towards developing a device that could help blind people see again. So there are some groups, like the University of Melbourne, for instance, who've been trying to develop a retinal device. That's a device that goes into the back of the eye to help some people with blindness see again. But what we decided to do was to develop a device that would go into the brain itself, into the vision part of the brain. So a direct electrical implant which interfaces with a camera on a glasses frame and a vision processing computer to actually transform the photographic images from the camera through the computer through an antenna wirelessly to the electrodes in the vision part of the brain. And we're currently working towards a first-in-human trial. We've done all of our preclinical testing. The device is looking good. It's a wireless device, as I said, so it's leading technology, and we hope to have it into a human within the next 6 to 12 months.
Well, that's fantastic. Now, over many years, you've been deployed in conflict zones with the Australian Defence Force overseas, and they include Rwanda twice, to East Timor, Bougainville twice, Solomon Islands, and twice to Iraq. Can you tell us what kind of injuries would you have to deal with as a surgeon on these deployments?
Well, for the deployments to our region, it's been mostly peacekeeping operations, and it's mostly looking after the local people, and that covers the full range of general surgery, but with an emphasis on trauma, but it also includes obstetrics and paediatrics surgery, and really is very broad general surgery, humanitarian surgery, if you like to call it that. But when one deploys to Iraq into a war zone where there are, our people are war fighters or our allies are, then the sort of surgery that's required is mainly military trauma involving ballistic trauma, so gunshot wounds, blast injuries, and the aftermath of that. So it is very confronting surgery, and it's very different surgery to the sort that we would encounter in peacetime in Australia.
So with those kinds of injuries that you deal with over there, when you come home each time, is it hard to adjust to what you're doing back here?
Yes, well, it is hard to adjust, but what happens with reservists like me is that we usually have the weekend off once we get back, and then we're straight back into it. We probably should have a decompression period where we try and have a week or two off to really readjust to the home environment. It's probably not good for your mental health to go straight back into it, but that's what I have done in the past.
Now, you've seen your fair share of the effects of terrorism overseas, but we're not immune from that here either, are we?
No, that's right. I think we're at a moderate level on the government's scale of probabilities, and we do have to be prepared for terrorist events in Australia. There have been a few over the last decade or so, but they're usually small in scale and usually not what you'd see in Afghanistan or Syria, where bombs go off and there might be 100 or more casualties, sometimes 200 or 300 casualties, and maybe, you know, 50 deaths. So we haven't seen that sort of carnage here in Australia, but nevertheless, we do need to be prepared for it. Let's say a bomb goes off in a sports stadium or a nightclub where there are maybe hundreds of people, or even thousands in the case of a sporting event. You can imagine that the carnage would be horrendous. So yes, we do have to prepare for it, and in fact, the system is prepared. I mean, there has been a lot of thought gone into how to prepare the disaster system, as you could call it, for such an event. And the pre-hospital system, that is the ambulance, the fire brigade, the police, do have disaster plans, as do the major hospitals. There is a trauma plan in all of the states for such an eventuality. However, the personnel involved need to be well prepared mentally and in terms of their skill sets to undertake the care required to look after these victims. Not only the professional carers, but the non-professional ones as well. That is, first responders, who are often first at the scene and have to deal with the casualties before the professionals, like the paramedics, arrive. So the question is, how can we upskill our first responders, the members of the general public, as well as our professional responders in how to deal best with these sort of horrendous injuries?
Well, that leads us then, of course, to the hemorrhage control, and it's developed by the American College of Surgeons. Could you tell us a bit about that and why first responders should do that course?
Yes, well, this is developed in the United States because of the multiple mass shooting events that they've had over there, where semi-automatic or automatic weapons are used to mow down innocent people. And the death rate and the injuries are horrendous. But with very good first aid, you can actually save lives that otherwise would have been lost. And the Americans have realised this, and the College of Surgeons and a group called the Hartford Consensus, which has been supported by the White House, have developed a course called the HEMCON course, H-E-M-C-O-N course, which is on a website called stopthebleed.com, stopthebleed.com. And in this course, there are three components, and it takes a couple of hours probably to do the course. It's not running here in Australia as yet, as far as I know, but there's no reason why it couldn't be, and I'd like to see it run here. But the three components are, firstly, how to apply direct pressure on wounds to stop bleeding. Secondly, how to apply tourniquets, either to oneself or to someone else who's injured. And thirdly, how to pack wounds with special gauze to stop bleeding as well, or a combination of all three. So they're all very simple things to do, and members of the general public can learn to do these things very easily. And hopefully our caregivers in hospitals, like the emergency departments and beyond in the hospitals, also know how to do all these things and are well versed in it and are well practiced in it and do these things as well. Because the earlier you stop bleeding, the more lives that will be saved. We do know that people die at the scene from blood loss, and that the blood loss can be stopped if it's coming from particularly the limbs, and that's where this course really, really helps to get people to stop the bleeding. And then people come to hospital not as shocked as they would be, or they don't die at the scene because the bleeding is stopped. The tourniquets are a tremendous way of stopping bleeding. there were a number of years went by when tourniquets were a no-no, because it was thought that if you put a tourniquet on, you might cut the blood supply off for enough time so that the limb had to be amputated and you'd lose the limb. But that's proved not to be the case. You can leave the tourniquet on for 2 or 3 hours and still not lose the limb. And what we've seen in Iraq and Syria and Afghanistan is that we know that soldiers are living because they've had tourniquets put on very shortly after the trauma event, and the bleeding has stopped and they've managed to get to hospital where the definitive surgery can take place to repair the bleeding point, but the first aid has actually saved their lives. And that's why the HEMCON course was developed, to train civilians in how to stop bleeding to save lives in a terrorist event. But it's not just terrorism, it's also, you could imagine a shark attack where a shark has bitten into someone's leg or arm and there's tremendous bleeding from that. And what we normally hear in news reports is that people at the scene take off their belt and use the belt as a tourniquet, or they use a shirt sleeve, tear up their shirt, use it as a bandage, and that's all okay. But what HEMCON does is it actually has kits that are like first aid kits, but they have all the equipment in there that you use to stop the bleeding. And you could imagine in the life-saving club or in buildings along the city, major city routes, there could be these kits, like you have defibrillation kits in public places. You could have these kits that HEMCON supplies, which have tourniquets in them and bandages. And so these kits could be used to help save lives.
And you're a strong advocate for everyone, the general public, to carry tourniquets in their cars. Is that right?
Well, I've just said that I carry the tourniquets in my car. And it would be tremendous if many more people were carrying them as well, because they don't occupy much room. They're very cheap, and they last a long time. They are a life-saving bit of kit that you just never know when you'll need it. I would encourage people to do the course and get a tourniquet or two and have it in your car. For a rainy day, shall we say. And it could be even after a road accident that you could deploy a tourniquet. That's not necessarily a bomb blast.
For those in the media who've being alarmist that they are, you calling for tourniquets in cars, what do you say about those who think you're being alarmist?
Well, let's put it this way, that if they themselves or their family were involved in a terrorist event, a bomb blast, they would want everything done to save lives, to save the lives of their family. And this is exactly the philosophy that we use in combat. If a soldier's hit by bullets or bombs, that we try and do all we can to save their life. And I just think that we've got to do the same here. It doesn't take too much to save a life. And if we can save it, well, we definitely should do that. Whether I'm being alarmist or not, we do have to be prepared for mass casualties in our current situation. And the training that is involved could be used for individual casualties as well, as I've explained. So the training doesn't go to waste. And even if you train people, they will remember the training for many years afterwards. And it's like when I learned first aid in school through St John Ambulance, I still remember the training. And I'm a member of St John Ambulance, so I'm very familiar with what St John does. And I'd like to see St John bring in this type of training into their first aid courses.
Well, finally, Geoffrey, with so much you've done in your professional life, what motivates you and gives you the energy to be such an A-class achiever?
Look, I try and do my best for my fellow man, as it were. I try and do my best for Australia. I try and achieve excellence in whatever I do, and I'm prepared to give something back. It's about giving something back. I've gained a lot by living in this wonderful country and being able to go to school here and university and carry on my profession in a free democratic society, and I see what goes on in other parts of the world, and I realise how lucky I am, and that really I'm obliged to give something back, and that's what I do.
Professor Jeffrey Rosenfeld. RAC's Post-Op Podcast is brought to you with the compliments of the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons and leading financial services organisation, the Bongiorno National Network, the preferred choice for medical professionals across Australia. You can reach the Bongiorno National Network on +613 9863 3111.